Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We have a fun one today. I'm in Washington, where tonight Penn State will take on Georgetown. You just listened inside Penn State Athletics with Patrick Chambers. 6:30, the tip, 6 o'clock, the airtime. Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus at 3:35. And then our high school roundtable from 4 to 5. We're going to discuss as many issues as possible with high school football. Even though Pennsylvania is one of only 4 or 5 states in the country that's seen participation level actually go up in high school football. It's up 2% in 10 years. The other 45 states in the country have seen a decrease, even though 14 out of every 100 boys in the country in high school do go out for football, which is by far number one, and it's number one by a wide margin. But as time has gone, you feel like, even though there's extreme interest in it, we're going to discuss the issues of participation, JV teams, safety, regular season versus playoffs, conference versus district, and what's important. So I'm going to bring up all of those items along the way to our distinguished panel, and we're looking forward to having all of them on. Todd Hummel from the Daily Item, Kevin Herr, and Justin Michaels. I think we're going to bring up some important topics over the next, from 4 to 5 today, and get their opinion, because they're the ones that are around it in the trenches all the time. They're the ones that talk to all the people that are in the trenches all the time. So what is the participation level? How can you possibly increase participation level? Is enough being done in the safety level? What about the fields that they play on? What about, there's a long list of things and items I want to get to in the show today. Sean, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, sir. Safe travel down to D.C. last night, I take it?
I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
One of the big reasons I wanted to take the bus down here is that I didn't want to drive back tonight. I'll let somebody else drive. I'm probably going to get back about, I would say, between 1 and 2 in the morning. And, I have to sit down and do an interview with James tomorrow morning at 9:45 up in the office, which is fine. Now, the timing will work out great. I'll give you an example 2 weeks from now. When Penn State is playing at the Barclays Center in that tournament, the basketball team is going to be not leaving till Saturday morning. And because the basketball team's not leaving till Saturday morning, I will have to drive that one. Because as soon as the game's over Friday night, I have to drive back to make sure I'm here in time and rested enough to do the Rutgers game that day. And that we have no idea what time that game kicks off. The game could be at noon, could be on at 10:30. And if Penn State's in the championship game, if Penn State makes the championship game on Friday, I might get back at 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., because the championship game's at 9 that night. So I might get back at like 3:30 in the morning and say Penn State's playing a noon game and we're on at 10:30. You get home at 3:30. You try and get yourself like 4.5 hours sleep because you're going to have to. You still have to drive in. You still have to get there early enough. So maybe I'll get like 5 hours of sleep then do it. But then, you know what? No complaints here. Wouldn't have it any other way. No complaints here. All right. James Wiseman of Memphis. They've given up the court case considered to be the number one recruit in the country in college basketball. He did play the opening game. I don't know. He may have played a second game, too. I guess he played a second game during this court injunction.
Yeah, he played. Yeah, he played Tuesday night in the Phil Knight tournament out in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, when Oregon defeated Memphis.
Well, right now he is ineligible, and they're trying to appeal to the NCAA to see if he can be eligible. And this goes back to Penny Hardaway when he was in high school. Penny Hardaway was not the coach, obviously, at Memphis at the time, but giving money. And for Chase Young, you know, Chase Young, the loan that he paid back, he's going to be able to play. They solved his situation quickly. It'll be interesting to see if they solve the James Wiseman situation with the same sense of urgency. I think that brings with it, I think, some interesting questions.
I heard Jay Billis earlier today say the way this falls into place in terms of penalties and that kind of thing from the NCAA, he would probably sit out somewhere in the area of one-third of the season. So that could be talking 9-10 games. So he wouldn't be out the whole year.
And that means he'd be eligible to play during the conference season in the American. I always find it interesting when there is discussion about rules. And, of course, there's a lot of discussion about payment. What's never brought up is it doesn't matter and it's irrelevant what the future rule is going to be. It's always brought up, well, you know, these guys should be paid. They shouldn't have to go through this, you know. That's fine. Let's take this is the example I'll give. It's like being on a highway. It's a straight ribbon on a highway for 50 miles. Sean and I may think the speed limit should be 90. Really, I mean, it's a straight ribbon on the highway. The speed limit should be 90. You know, like Montana. Montana is unlimited. Well, the speed limit here should be 90.
But if it is, I would probably, let's sneak it up. I'll go about 94.
Right. And then you've got, the ones with the complex that think they can go fast no matter what. So we'll bring up the suit later. All right, so... But we may think it should be 90. But the law right now says it's 70. Well, if we're going 90 and we get stopped, we can't say, it's a straight ribbon highway. We think it should be 90. And the officer is going to look at you and say, the speed limit's 70. That's the current law. And that's when I look at, for example, the Chase Young situation. I look at James Wiseman, for example. It does not matter one iota what the thought is and what the future of athletics happens to be. It's what is the current rule. Okay? What is the current rule? And the one thing I find interesting about the Chase Young situation is he certainly did do his darndest to make sure nobody found out. It wasn't like he did this and then told Ohio State, hey, I'm doing this. He didn't tell them. Something tells me he knew he shouldn't do it. And he didn't tell anybody, did he? Did he tell Ohio State? Did he tell Urban?
Maybe he didn't want mom or dad to know he wanted to have the girlfriend go to the Rose Bowl.
Sneak her
out to Cali.
No offense. I think mom and dad figured out she was there. He didn't tell Larry Johnson, did he? It's interesting. He knows he broke a rule. He didn't tell anybody. We'll just do this. Nobody will know. Well, now, how anybody found out, I have no idea. But it does not matter what you think. It's irrelevant if you think, well, athletes should be getting some money, the elite athlete should be getting money. If you think that's perfectly fine. But that doesn't apply to the situation. That's not the current rule. Just like we can't drive 90 on Interstate 80, even though maybe some of you out there think that 90 should be the speed limit. The speed limit on I-80 is 65 around Jersey Shore, and it's 70 in other parts. Yeah, you're going 90. Well, it should be 90 here. Well, it doesn't matter what you think it should be. It's not. Okay? So what's the current rule? Well, you know, Wiseman and Young both broke current rules. I mean, they're there for a reason. Will it lead to change? Yeah, it could lead to change, but it doesn't matter if it leads to change. It'll matter for those in the future, but it doesn't matter for the current situation. The current situation has a rule. Each one broke one. All right. We'll take a break. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Hey, you, it's time for Sunbury Motors to eat their remaining 2019 Ford leftovers. Choose from over 20 of the hot-selling Ford Escapes for as low as $17,585. Love compact SUVs? Sunbury Motors has the leader of the pack. The 2019 Ford 4x4 EcoSport, slashed to just $20,525. SMC would give these away, but they know you'd feel guilty. Take up to $9,000 off new 2019 Ford Edges, up to $10,000 off new Ford 2019 Fusions, and up to an amazing $12,000 off on new 2019 Ford Expeditions. That's a whole lot of amazing. Pick from over 65 new 2019 leftover F-150s with total savings up to $14,750 off MSRP on 4x4 Super Cruise. Feast on Sunbury Motors 2019 Ford leftovers by November 30th before they're all gone. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Proudly serving all of Central PA for 105 years. Gobble, gobble, hey.
Penn State basketball tonight, Georgetown here at 6:30 on at 6 o'clock. Saturday, Penn State football, Indiana Beaver Stadium. Noon the kickoff, 10:30 will be the airtime. Tonight, the Steelers will play the Cleveland Browns. In fact, I was talking to Kevin Kugler today. Kevin's here. And I said, what do you got this week? He says, I got Illinois again. He says, this is the sixth Illinois game I've done this season on Saturday. And then Kevin is going to Mexico City. He's going to do the Chargers-Chiefs game in Mexico because Kevin Harlan, with his NFL assignment on Sunday, can't make it to Mexico. So Kevin's going to fill in and do that on Monday. Tonight, the Steelers play the Browns. Already, there is massive pacing in the broadcast facility of Champions, despite the fact that I feel like I've been a calming influence on Sean.
If that is happening, that's not coming from yours truly. The pacing matters.
We already know, and that's why you need the bigger office in the back. There's more room to pace.
That's very true. Very true. Right. But yeah, we will go to Steelers Browns on WKOK tonight after you and DJ are complete.
What's interesting, and this is not good for Pitt. Pitt's playing tonight.
Oh, that's right.
They're playing North Carolina tonight.
Hmm.
At Heinz Field, opposite the Steelers game. Now, who in the ACC thought this was a really good idea? Hey, this has nothing to do. Pitt did not pick this. They don't sit there and say, we're going to play Thursday night. They're told television-wise they're going to play Thursday night.
And when the NFL schedule came out in April, that'd be the earliest that Pat Narduzzi would have caught wind about it.
Well,
not that he could have done anything. Not that he could have done anything about it, but...
But they don't set these Thursday games in the ACC until after that. That's, you know, I've told you, how many times have I told you? I know scheduling can be difficult, but it's not on the degree of difficulty. It's not the Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project, nuclear bomb, difficult. Okay. Scheduling Pitt, North Carolina, opposite, and keeping it away from the Steelers playing on Thursday night, easy. You put another game on Thursday. Okay. Making sure Pitt doesn't play opposite the Steelers on a Thursday night. Actually, easy. Who makes that mistake?
Well, heck, you could play that on Saturday since you don't have to, turn around the stadium and turn it into a Steeler field then for Sunday's game at Heinz Field.
I mean, I don't, unless there's a, is it, would the WPIAL playoffs being played?
Oh, that's right. I think that is happening this weekend. I think you're right. Normally that was Thanksgiving weekend, and now, okay. Yeah, I think they did move that up. Yeah, with the whole.
I'm just asking. I don't know.
That could be.
But then why don't play it Friday night? I mean, I don't get. How many times have I said scheduling? All right, they make it seem like it's the hardest thing in the face of the earth. Then you get one where the Steeler game with the Browns has been on the schedule for Thursday night since April, and nobody in the ACC figured it out. Nobody. This is not Pitt's fault. It's not North Carolina's fault. But he said, "Say, who in the common sense meter sat back and went, yeah, we're all set there. We're good." You do know that Pitt's playing opposite the Steelers. Huh? What? The NFL is Thursday night games? Not good. It's not a good look. Not a good look.
Yes, there will be some Whippeal games played this weekend at Heinz Field on Saturday. Probably
do they have any Friday?
Zipping through these now. Looks like most of them are... they're not playing all six games there. Let's see. So we got... so they're all on Saturday.
They're all Saturday.
They're all on Saturday.
They could have played this game Friday night, then.
Yeah, single A is Saturday morning at 11. Double A is being played at Norwin High School.
Okay.
Triple A, Heinz Field at 2. The Quad A is Heinz Field at 5. And then the 6A will be at Heinz Field at 8.
That field is going to be a mess.
Ugh. So four of the six games will be played at Heinz Field.
Look, the weather's going to be, it's going to be obviously chilly on Saturday. But just the wear and tear of four games, even though the weather's fine, so you won't have mud or anything like that. That field, which is already traditionally one of the worst fields in the NFL to begin with, that field's going to be just torn to shreds.
The good thing is then the following weekend...
You're talking five games, though, in 48 hours.
Yeah. Luckily, the Steelers, they have no... they're not back... they don't have another home game then until December. So after Cleveland, then they go to Cincinnati on the 24th.
Yeah, but does Pitt have another game there? So you gotta, there's multiple tenants there. So that means the question, I know the next potential Pitt game there would be Saturday the 23rd, right? Potentially. I don't know if it is or not. Or is it Saturday the 30th? Yeah, that field's going to get torn to shreds. Oh, well.
November 23rd, Pitt is at Virginia Tech on the 23rd.
Okay. What about the 30th?
And then the 30th, they are at home against Boston College.
Hopefully they put on extra people at the ticket office. All right. All right. Coming up, Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus. Then from 4:06 to 5, our high school roundtable, which includes the soup because we're in it for the clicks. No?
Click, 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 click.
How many times have you heard me say we're in it for the clicks?
That was the first. That was, okay, there's a
second. It was also meant as a joke.
The Penn State Nittany Lions play on WKOK.
He faked the pitch. He took it home himself. And the Nittany Lions have a two-score lead.
Penn State football is sponsored by Sunbury Motor Company, Shade Mountain Winery, W&L Subaru, Turbotville National Bank, Zimmerman Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Truck. The Nittany Lions take on Indiana Saturday in Beaver Stadium on Military Appreciation Day. Kickoff is noon. We're on beginning at 10:30. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. From 4:05 to 5 today, our high school roundtable. The issues of high school football, the pluses and the minuses, and where the sport is going in the district. Todd Hummel, Daily Item, Justin Michaels, voice of Lewisburg football, and Kevin Herr, the voice of Shikellamy football. In the roundtable, we're going to go through a wide range of issues. Tomorrow, from 3:35 to 4:30 tomorrow, the voices of Penn State. Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State wrestling. Justin Antwiel, the new voice of Lady Lion basketball. And Brian Tripp, the voice of Penn State ice hockey and Penn State baseball, will all be on the show together tomorrow. We're going to talk about their respective sports. We're going to talk about their respective careers, how they got into it, mentors, rewarding moments for them, parts of the job they find easy, parts of the job that they find difficult, relating to the fan. You're talking about sports, for example, where not every game for Lady Lion basketball is on TV. Not every match and dual meet is on the air for Penn State wrestling on TV. Not every men's ice hockey game is on TV. Not every baseball game is on TV. So these three guys have become those with the verbal brush that paint the picture that keeps the fan in contact with what's happening on the court, the mat, or the ice, or the field. And so I have an opportunity to get to know them even better, because obviously over the years, fans of Penn State have really come to respect and enjoy their work. We'll have all three of them together tomorrow for the first time. All three of them have never been together on the same show. We want to put them on the same show tomorrow as well. I think that'll be a fun hour as well, leading into the King, who, by the way, had a disastrous pick week last week.
2-5. That's right. Gained ground a little bit, you and I. You and him are now tied.
Let's face it. Nobody was over 500 last week, so let's not pretend we hit the accelerator here. All right. We always talk about the speed limit being 90 that we think it should be, and actually it's only 70. You and I, no offense, we're driving 45. We weren't doing that great. We did just enough to gain a little bit of ground. All right. Let's bring in Cam Meller, Pro Football Focus. Cam, it's always great to have you with us. Welcome back as we have a little more fun.
I can roll with Carmen Electra. I may or may not have had a Carmen Electra poster in my college dorm my freshman year at Florida State. I can roll with it.
This may be more information than I needed, but it's intriguing. All right. I want to get to the Alabama game. I want to start with Joe Burrow. Has Joe Burrow put him in a spot where he grades out to a point where if somebody needed a quarterback with the first overall pick, Pro Football Focus grades would back it up?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, we've called his rise maybe the biggest ever that we've seen. I think it's a meteoric rise. We didn't even have him on our draft board, our preseason draft board of the 10 best quarterbacks. And now we not only have him as the best quarterback overall prospect, we have him as the first overall pick in our mock drafts and our simulations just because of how high he's graded and what he's graded so high at as well. You know, you had Kyler Murray, who was accurate and could throw deep and had the athleticism. We had Baker Mayfield 2 years ago, similar grade, but super accurate in the way he handled the ball. Burrow does everything you'd want of an NFL quarterback in today's NFL, and he does it at elite levels, and it's mirroring those successes kind of across the board that Kyler and Baker had over the past 2 years.
And again, when he was at Ohio State camp, I didn't really think twice about him. I mean, he's on the roster. He gets into a game here or there. You watch the tape. I didn't think twice about him. I mean, what is the difference in Joe Burrow from last year at LSU, where he was very, very good, very good? But what's the difference now from the really good Joe Burrow to the potentially great Joe Burrow?
It's a truly great question. I think a lot goes to Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator, but
Joe Brady, just so everyone knows, Joe Brady was a grad assistant here at Penn State in 15 and 16. He was just here 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, his rise to fame. You can basically, if I'm the NFL team that drafts him first, I may even think about bringing Brady over because he's really hard as what it is. Burrow wasn't even supposed to start at his time in high school at quarterback. So I found this out. I did a little research, and there was a kid from California that had to move back to California. It's the only reason that Burrow saw the field as a quarterback in high school at Athens High, and then he became Mr. Ohio Football, Ohio State. Didn't get on the field there, and here he is now. Honestly, the rise, I think, can be attributed, yes, to Brady, but it's the way that he's handled everything, and it seems like his IQ has grown, his arm strength has grown, but there's trust. He has trust not only in his teammates, his offensive line, but in his own arm and in and of himself. I think Trevor Lawrence is the opposite situation. When he started the year, he trusted himself too much. Burrow never really trusted himself, it seems like, to make those tight window throws, those tough throws on the run, those under pressure decisions. And here Burrow is now with trust, and it's well respected, well deserved. But yeah, he's making the right decisions, and the way he, you know, reads, goes through his progressions and his reads, it's uncanny. I don't think we've seen it in a long time.
All right, let's get to Indiana, which Penn State will be playing next. Peyton Ramsey is named after Peyton Manning. And his brother Tanner is named after Joe Montana. And his brother Drew is named after Drew Bledsoe. So, he comes from a football family. No Michael Penix. So what is the difference, Cam, in Michael Penix, the lefty, and Peyton Ramsey?
There was the mobility that Penix brought. There was the downfield passing ability that I think he added to this Indiana offense that Ramsey has not over the years as well. But honestly, I thought this Indiana team was completely different with Penix at quarterback than Ramsey to start the season and when we saw them in spot duty. But over the past two games, in their rise since they've, upset and then they've gone into the top 25 for the first time since the late 90s, he's been a completely different quarterback. He's been the highest, or one of, I think, it's graded quarterbacks since week 8. And I know it's only Maryland, Northwestern, and Nebraska that they've got on their schedule, but he's added this downfield passing ability, that Penix brought. And he's taken quite a few sacks, but he throws such a soft ball that he makes his receivers look a lot better than they actually are. And when you have those talented guys outside like they do, and then Fillior as well, he's finding these guys in open lanes and open spaces, and he's doing so, down the field, which I didn't think he had in him this season, but he's proven me wrong over the past three games.
You mentioned in that answer Wap Fillior. You and I have talked a lot, Cam, about K.J. Hamler. Is Fillior in some ways like K.J. Hamler?
Yeah, I think so. I think where they differ maybe is that Fillior doesn't drop as many passes as Hamler has this season, at least. Hamler has the advantage over him in terms of the slot production, but that's because of the way they line up. Fillior around the entire offense. I think there is some similarities. There's that shiftiness. There's that inside receiving that they're both not afraid to go over the middle with their body types, which is kind of shocking. Willing to go over the middle when the linebackers are going to be bigger than you, the safeties are going to be bigger than you. So I think Fillior has the hands advantage over Hamler, though. Hamler may have him on routes, but Fillior has those hands. And if you queue up the tape or search his name anywhere on the internet, you're gonna come across a couple of our big time catches, so to speak, that Fillior's put up this year.
The tight end, Peyton Hendershot. I want to get to Pat Freiermuth in a few moments. Freiermuth's had a fabulous season. What kind of player has Peyton Hendershot been at tight end, and how reliable has he been when Peyton Ramsey gets into a tight spot?
Yeah, he seems to be that guy. He seems to be the not only the red zone threat, but he's also that guy on third down or late in the down that he knows he can come back to. Hendershot does a really good job, I think, of breaking tackles after the catch. You mentioned the guy I think we'll talk about who also breaks tackles too, but he seems to be that go-to guy over the middle with safe hands. I think just a drop on the season on 30 catchable passes his way. He doesn't have quite the gaudy numbers in terms of that, but he does, yak up guards after the catch, and he's a tough guy to bring down. He's no Cheyenne O'Grady at Arkansas. But, he's that reliable guy across the middle. What he lacks in pass blocking, I will say, or in run blocking, he definitely makes up for with his receiving skills.
Which then I'll transition now to Pat Freiermuth, coming off another strong performance against Minnesota on Saturday. What do you see grade-wise in a Pat Freiermuth, not just as a receiver, but also a run blocking grade?
Yeah, if you want to talk about safe hands, he's, you know, if Hamler drops a lot, Freiermuth does not drop basically anything, and that's what I really like. I like the ability for him to be that kind of guy who can be that reliable target in crunch time, in these crunch decisions, those moments, those third and fourth down moments if necessary. Run blocking's been above average. Not a lot to write home about, but I do think that there is, you know, tight end, I think, is one of those most difficult aspects or most difficult positions on offense. You have to be able to block in the run game, the pass game, and then, you know, those hands of stone have to turn into soft, feathery hands to catch passes thrown your way. So it's a very difficult position. So to have, at this point of the season, well above average grades in all of the facets, you know, that speaks to how well he's played this year.
When you look at Indiana defensively, they've been able to shut out Rutgers. They shut out Eastern Illinois. They gave up three against Northwestern. But then when they played some good offenses, they have given up points. I mean, I'm just trying to be fair about the body of work. They do play a little different than some teams because they play that robber coverage, which essentially that's a cover two and there's a freelancer in there that sometimes is a spy. And that freelancer usually is Marcelino Ball, number nine. When you look at it, he's been there for a while. He usually is a guy that's around the ball. How well is he graded out this year for Indiana?
He actually hasn't graded out all that well.
I'm glad you said that because I'm watching the tape and he doesn't seem like the same kind of player the last couple of years to me, just watching him.
Yeah, and I'll get to that too. I think he graded out really well. He was on our list of preseason Big Ten All-American. If we, you know, he's on the maybe our honors list or our watch list for that. I've missed tackles, and where he, you know, what he doesn't add is a whole lot of coverage skills this season, actually, like he has years past, where, you know, when you are that free-roaming guy, you have to be that guy that has the nose to the football. We saw it with Antoine Winfield. They let him just roam freely to the ball, and what does he do? He comes up with multiple plays. So, you know, Ball doesn't have an interception. He doesn't have any pass breakups. He's only got two or three forced incompletions in his coverage. So he's allowing completions almost at will, so to speak, if he is targeted. But he's just not making those plays on the ball that are going to make you notice in that free running position.
All right. Let's get to a couple of the big games for the weekend. One's going to be Georgia and Auburn. Early in the year, you and I touched on Bo Nix. Now, he does have really one of the perfect names. I mentioned Joe Montana's name earlier. Bo Nix has one of the perfect quarterback names going. But he's also a true freshman. Has he progressed in the last month, or should there be concern at Auburn that he has plateaued?
I think there's the stats going out around there that I don't even say he's plateaued. I think he fell climbing the mountain towards the plateau. Those big games.
That's not good.
Where he's kind of, where he's fallen down. I think anytime they've played a really good defense, we've seen him struggle. We've seen him with, I think, 12 turnover-worthy passes just against, I believe it's Oregon and then LSU, and then there's one more in there, I believe. So 12 of his 14 total turnover-worthy passes have come against good defenses. So the defenses that can figure them out, no surprise they've lost two of those games as well. So he hasn't quite reached the plateau. They lose Gatewood. He transfers out as well, which I thought was a better quarterback in the long run for them here. But we'll see if he can shake it off. And, I mean, a victory against Georgia will certainly right the ship for him, so to speak, for maybe, in all intents and purposes. They do have a good enough defense to I think, limit Georgia as well. So we'll see. That's an interesting game in that regard because, you know, Nix versus Fromm, Fromm.
Right. Georgia is a team that right now in the college football playoff ranking is four, and there's a long way to go in this, but right now they're the team in the four spot. They have, obviously, a win over Florida, and they also have a win over Notre Dame, which I want to get to in a moment. When you look at Florida, are they a better team with Kyle Trask at quarterback compared to Felipe Franks?
I would agree 100%. Into the year, I was not a fan of Florida if they were going to go with Franks the entire time. I thought Emory Jones added that fun aspect. Trask is definitely the best downfield passer they've had in a while, and I think that it speaks to them and how he's been able to get the offense to roll. When he does actually get on, he needs to limit those turnover-worthy passes, those mistakes as well down the field. But, I mean, when you're thrust into action in a game like the game against Kentucky when he didn't think he was going to and do what he did since then, you know, I like where the Gators are going with him at quarterback.
So now I want to get to Notre Dame. Notre Dame would be considered the other quality win at home that Georgia has. They have also have a loss to South Carolina, which is not playing well. Oh, and by the way, used a third-string quarterback in that game to beat Georgia. Notre Dame, okay, How much of this is reputation and how much of this is quality in your mind? Because you look at the grades, you see how people grade out. Is Notre Dame more the team that fought Georgia to the end, or are they more the team that could not compete against Michigan?
I think they're more the team that could not compete against Michigan. They needed a dramatic come from behind against Virginia Tech, who was also on their third-string quarterback as well. So, they get by a lot on reputation. I think we were just talking about it off-air as well just before. Is Notre Dame – it's not as Texas back as Notre Dame back, and I don't think they've really technically been back. This has been a team that gets by on a lot of their reputation. Ian Book was just a middle-tier, I think 60th overall graded quarterback a season ago. But in the offseason, this turned into Notre Dame's quarterback of the future, Notre Dame's great signal caller, and instantly you just knew him as a household name. And I don't think he ever deserved that, to be honest. He hasn't graded very well. He hasn't done enough, in my opinion. I know he does have the win against Georgia Tech or Virginia Tech on his back here, and then the close loss against Georgia. But he just hasn't done enough, in my opinion, and I think I've seen some fans as well saying they're ready for the Ian Book era to be over for that reason, too.
I want to bring just the overall team. When you look at them defensively, over the years they've had some good players come out defensively. Where are they right now defensively grade-wise? Is there anybody in that you look at on their defense, Notre Dame, that has a top three-round grade?
I think Julian Okwara on the edge, and then maybe Khalid Kareem could sneak in.
I can agree with that. Okay.
Yeah. Asmar Bilal, the linebacker as well, he's had an incredible grade turnaround from the years past. He's been there, it seemed like, forever from Ben Davis High School in state as well. He's been around. He was middling, and then Bilal's kind of blossomed into this sure tackler with great coverage skills and awesome against run defense. So he may have made himself some money this season, but outside of those guys, no. Kyle Hamilton, the freshman at safety, has had some moments, but he's also had lapses in coverage too. So, there's not really anybody. I think they're going to lose Okwara, Bilal, and Kareem this year, so they have a lot of reloading to do on defense.
I want to ask about Baylor before we go here. Baylor coached by State College's Matt Rhule, who also went to Penn State. They're undefeated at this point. When you look at the grade out on them, why are they an undefeated team at this point?
It's Charlie Brewer, I would say. Charlie Brewer is a real big reason for it. He can will them to wins when necessary, and does enough in the passing game to get them these wins. I think the defense has kept them in those games to allow him to come back from just short, small deficits. Denzel Mims with the crazy big-time catches, multiple ones in recent games where they've had to come back. I'm a little wary of this team in terms of its depth outside of their star players. James Lynch and James Lockhart along the edge, those guys are great. Bravion Roy in the middle, too. So they have some solid defensive play, elite-level play. But they need a little bit more, and I think they need a complete game if they even want to compete with Oklahoma this week.
Charlie Brewer, I think, is interesting because I think Charlie Brewer is the definite. You win a lot of games with really good college players. Superstars are awesome, obviously. But really, if you have enough really good college players, you're going to be there. I feel like Charlie Brewer is one of those who really good college player. Am I being fair?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think that there's necessarily a comp on him for a pro quarterback for that reason. I think he's a really, really good college quarterback and one of those guys for that reason that we'll likely see for, all 4 years, basically, because he doesn't make that leap early. So I'm all for that, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. And that's something we were talking earlier. People don't talk enough about the really good college player because, let's face it, superstars sell. I mean, they sell. You're a superstar to us. We think you sell. Thanks so much, Cam. The half hour we spend with you every week is extremely, extremely enjoyable.
It is my pleasure, as always. Thank you, as always, for having me.
Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus, our high school roundtable, next hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.